Welcome back to the Mojo Podcast, a place for curious minds to fill up on leadership inspiration and hear wonderful stories of mojo, lost and found, high and low. I'm your host, Richard Stokes, and we meet here every fortnight to spend time with a diverse and brilliant group of guests who have been generous to spend time with me. This new series, The Sixth, is all about commitment, a concept we all understand, but that can prove elusive and even fearful for us. So in this series, I wanted to get under the skin of commitment, how we can commit to ourselves, to our values, our purpose, and then see the payoff when we literally choose not to have any more choice. Commitment is one of life's most beautiful paradoxes. This week, we're over in sunny Los Angeles in a post-Oscars glow, meeting with a British comedian committed to her new life in California. Charlotte Fox is a performer, artist, and comedian, as well as a yoga instructor and retreat host. She's pretty busy. She talks about the absolute need to commit to life on stage and in the spotlight.
You have to commit to it. Like, I have to commit to that joke. I have to say that with conviction. I have to know that what I'm talking about with conviction. I have to, you know, get up on stage and commit to that, because if you don't, no one's going to believe you.
We had a wonderful, insightful and entertaining chat about her mojo and how she finds commitment in what is a highly unconventional and unpredictable life. And as you'll hear, this is absolutely her passion and has been for a very young age. And in many ways, this love for performing makes the commitment really quite straightforward, if not easy. The urge to perform is just so, so strong in her. I hope you enjoy this one as much as I did. There is some strong language if you're listening with young ones or you're easily offended, which means you're probably not Charlotte's core audience. Please do rate and review and share this episode with people who will enjoy it. Okay, let's go over to LA for my Mojo chat with Charlotte Fox. So welcome back to the Mojo Podcast. And it's my absolute pleasure to go all the way over to LA to introduce my guest today, Charlotte Fox. Charlotte, how the devil are you?
Hello from La La Land. I'm great. I'm fabulous. I'm sipping on a blueberry juice smoothie in my new princess pad, living the dream right now.
Oh, that's what I want to hear. The dream. We're going to get into living the dream shortly. But Charlotte, I always start here for our listeners. Mojo on a scale 0 to 10 today. Where are you tracking?
I feel like I'm at a pretty solid like 8 or 9.
8 or 9. Okay. High.
Yeah, I'm high.
You are high, or it is high?
I'm high on life. Yeah.
And so if that's an 8 or a 9, so what to you then, what does mojo mean? What does that word mean to you?
I love this question because, yeah, it means, like, for me, mojo means appetite for life, like lust for life. Ooh. Swag, style. I think I said to you before, I was like, because mojo magazine, so it alludes to me that kind of a little bit rock and roll style as well, which I think has got some, yeah, nice flavor. So I think it's that. I think it's lust for life.
How do you make sure your lust for life is where you need it to be?
Make your dreams a reality. That sounds so like sordid. It sounds so like contrived, I guess. But yeah, just live your best life. I mean, that's how, you know, do things that make you feel great. Live in alignment with your dreams and purpose. That sounds so spiritual and motivational speaker right now, but I do feel that way, you know. Do what makes you happy.
Yeah. And look, and this whole series is about commitment. So if there's a commitment to yourself to make yourself happy, I'm guessing you're doing pretty well on that level right now.
Commitment to making myself and others happy, you know. It's like how we make other people feel as well is actually just, it's for me, that's actually probably more important, your impact and influence with other people. Like, I think that's where the good energy thrives.
Well, yeah, I'm getting that sort of sense of karma, I suppose. Like, what you put out, you're going to get back. You're in LA, I'm in Ibiza. We're all speaking the same language.
That's it.
and on that, because I know you're, are you from London originally, or the UK, certainly?
Yeah. So I was living in a few places in the UK. I was living in Brighton for a while, which is also quite a feel good little fabulous city by the sea. And then I was in North London for a while. I was in Hertfordshire. Like, my mum lived in a little village in near Cambridge, sort of in the middle of nowhere, just fields and stuff. So I mean, there was more than fields. But I have been dwelling in like London and Brighton and Ibiza, and now here, and yeah, I do think that the environment definitely plays a huge part in how your level of mojo, your and level of, fulfillment. Like, if you're surrounded by, people that are also goal getters and ambitious and stuff, then you're naturally going to tend toward that. But I guess, like, I'm really happy here in LA. I feel like I've found my home, truly.
Oh, wow. So, and what's the, can you distill what is the essence of LA for you? Because I think it conjures up lots for most people because it is Hollywood, it is everything, right? And it means so much. And you said La La Land when you started. What is it, the essence, if you pin it down, what's it, why is it home for you?
Oof, damn. I mean, listen, the essence of where I am right now is Botox, juices, lip filler, models, actors, ego, materialism, spiritual. Like, it's all of these crazy, wild things, but it's also a really heightened playground for so many people that have arrived to this place to, to follow their dreams or to pursue a passion or to live a life that is out of the 9 to 5 or out of the kind of, the norm core existence, right? So I feel like there's an element of that. But for me, being here, I mean, sunshine, palm trees, good vibes. People are more supportive. They're open to connections. Like, conversation is more free flowing. You can go out to your local store and people are happier than certainly being in London. Like, if I'm in London, like, I feel so depressed, and I'm sorry, but it just, that's how it is for me. I feel very low in my energy. I don't feel, my soul is happy there. And I felt like I was, you try really hard, I think, to integrate sometimes in certain places, and if it's just not gonna work, it's not gonna work. Move on, so I have, and I always knew in my heart that this place was where I needed to be. And yeah, it makes me, it feels like I have more flair and buoyancy for myself now. I wake up like, yeah.
Seize the
I'm
day.
just, seize the day, like, yeah, let's go, and you see it with other people as well, which is nice.
What I'm hearing is you kind of knew there was something else for you. You made a plan and you did it. Let's say you committed to it. I mean, I think many of us have that sense there's something else, but something gets in the way, whatever life fears. What allowed you on, so let's follow the LA thing a little bit longer to get there, live this life of buoyancy and flair. What enabled you to make that commitment?
Trust, courage, and risk, and playing as well. Like, I say those things with, like, yeah, so much gets in the way all the time. All the time, every day, someone's getting in your way. Every day, the phone is getting in your way, or like, you're getting in your own way. Like, it's consistent. And I think what you have to do to compete with that is to check in with yourself and, like, notice, what is it that I want? Why do I want that? Go make it happen, make the moves, book the flight, meet the person, open up the conversation, call it in, sit and meditate. I do yoga, I run the retreats, so I'm very, very in this practice myself and have been for years. And that, but predominantly, I have to say, sitting and that moment of presence with yourself and truly tapping into your heart and being like, oh, my heart says this, my mind says that. Your mind's always gonna, you know what I mean? Like, your mind's always gonna be like, don't do it, you haven't got enough money, you don't know anyone there. what's the point? What's the fucking point? You know, like, and then your heart's just going, crying, you know, just like, give me a break, yeah. You know what I mean?
Listen
like,
to me, listen to
yeah,
me.
yeah, it's all that, you know, so it's really, yeah, I think a deeper connection with your soul, I think, maybe, committing to the soul, committing to your truth, and yeah, commit, courage, dive in.
Yeah. Love it. Well, I love it. I mean, you know, that and that, I get that heart, soul, head, mind conversation / clash, which many of us have. And I think I could try and get this right. There is a Hindu saying about the mind being a great servant, but a terrible master. So, you know, if you let the thinking mind dictate everything, then there is going to be, as you say, fear and block and not trust and not following. What I'm getting from you is this deep sense of knowing that you just had, and then you did it. And you know, I love the real practical thing. I booked the bloody flight. that is the commitment. Right? I put the money on the table. I went.
And things will then move, start moving around you.
Okay.
Like, you have to start playing the game, right? It's playing with it. Playing with that energy, I think. Like, I did, you know, I've done so many retreats where I've sat in silence and come out of my, you know, meditations and thought to myself, oh my God, it's all energy. Like, everything's energy, you know. And it's only until you actually start to play with your life as a, and yourself and your force of like what you do, is you do start to notice things will shift. And like, you know, what you said about like the clash there, it's funny because it is, it's like, it is a conflict sometimes with yourself. There is conflict. And I think that's part, that is the battle that you have to overcome. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you have to overcome that in order to get the victory. Like, that's part of it. If there isn't, it wouldn't be fun. It wouldn't be a journey. Like, it's not just going to be there. It's not going to come to you. No one's going to come in your little, you know, wherever, and give you that mansion in Beverly Hills or whatever, unless you inherited it because you're a lucky bastard or whatever. Or like, you know, you're a trustafarian and, you know, fortune. But for us other people out there, you know, we're hustling.
Yeah. Well, this is what came to mind for me there was, you know, literally is the hero's journey. The Joseph Campbell kind of work about you are going out on the quest. You hear the call, you go on the quest, you meet the mentor, et cetera, et cetera. You have the dark night of the soul. And then you find out that the Holy Grail is in you.
I love
all
that.
Along, all along. But that's, ladies and gentlemen, that is a 30-second summary of the hero's journey for you done by
it's
me.
Marvelous. But,
well, thank you very much. So Charlotte, shifting gears slightly, obviously, I've introduced you in the intro, but what is it, if I'd say to you, what do people need to know about Charlotte to get to know you? What would the listeners need to know?
Okay. Self-made. Foxy. Naughty. Curious. And I'll say one more. Artist.
Fabulous. You know what I love though? You're describing yourself, not putting yourself into boxes of an identity based on a profession, which I ask that question to a lot of people. That's exactly what they come back to me with. Merchant banker, Richard, they might say, if they were one. Love it. Okay. Amazing. So, and let's sort of just, we're going to touch on all of them. And I suppose part of the reason we're talking is the artist, the comedian, the actor in you. I'd love to get a bit of the mindset of that, you know, that what it takes. We've been talking about pushing yourself already, you know, the push that launched you to LA. And I'm really fascinated about what launches you onto stage every night when you're doing things like your stand-up show, things like your Edinburgh Fringe, which I'd love to talk about as well. So what is the driver, Charlotte, behind that need?
When I'm on stage, I'm alive. I am alive and I feel completely almost the time could pass around me and move, and everything can happen. And I could just be on stage doing a show or performing or with an audience, and it could just go on and on and on forever. And I would love that. Like, it's, I feel you, it's like, not euphoria, but I would say it's a sense of just this so in flow, so fun, free flowing, like, you know, in your element, that type of thing, in your element. Like, and I love it so much. I have so much love for it. And I always have, you know, I think I told you, like, when I was four, I went up on stage. Yeah.
Right. I was going to ask how you discovered the sense of this is my element. So tell us what was the moment?
Yeah, I mean, this is going way back, but it did progress on from this. It wasn't like at four, I knew that I was a comedian. but maybe. I mean, I literally like was in this huge arena, and the guy on stage was, I think it was like a Christmas panto or something, or a big arena thing. And the guy was like, okay, you know, the kids have to, the first five children to come on stage are going to get this huge bag of chocolate, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I flew on stage, my little white hair flying through the rows of the stalls. My mum just said she just saw this blonde hair whizzing towards the stage. And before she knew it, I was the first one up there standing right next to this guy, the microphone there. And he just said, you know, what's your name? Where do you come from? And all this. And I completely mispronounced everything and was looking out to everyone. And the whole audience, I actually remember this, like looking out, and the whole audience laughed. And yeah, I remember that. I was honestly like, I couldn't have been older than four. And I was like, whoa, what happened there? And then afterwards, you know, you do the dance. I was dancing, drama school, then went to mime and clown school in Paris. That was my second area where I think I really found like, oh, my potential, and oh, I just love entertaining, you know, whether it's a day to day in an improvisation, a weekly show case. I just love it. That's me and my element. Me, audience, or yeah, somehow conveying characters and stories. And yeah.
And I love that, you know, that recollection of you being four in that place and that overwhelming feeling of this is me.
Yeah.
What a feeling to have, what a message to get. And then, and that you followed that up, right? Because, you know, you tell me, my observations of, you know, being an artist, actor, comedian is, it's, you know, this is not a standard, easy, you know, normcore road to follow in life. It's going to have some twists and turns and some bumps on the way, right? Is that fair?
You know, also when you say like that, you follow it, it also follows you. Like, you can't get away from that, you know.
Right.
The urge to get on stage, the urge to say something, the urge to write a song, to make art, like, it follows you. It's a desire, you know, it's sort of there. And it kind of, you can try to just, you know, there's no point suppressing it because it's a fabulous, wonderful thing. Although there are times when you're like, I don't know what I'm doing, what I'm writing, and all of that stuff. But yeah. And like, yeah, of course, there's definitely obstacles and things that come through. But yeah, you can't deny desire. You know what I mean?
Ooh, right. It's just this compulsion that I've got to do this.
Yeah. I think people also say with stand up that you get a bit of a buzz for it or a bit of a taste for it. And you certainly do. After a little bit of time, you get a bit of like, oh, the feeling of getting on stage. Because I mean, stand-up comedy is for sure like the adrenaline and the dope. I mean, the rush of that sometimes is like chemically, you know, you're experiencing a lot of things. And I, it's wonderful. Obviously, it's not just doing it for that kind of high, but at the same time, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that comes before that, you know, the nerves of getting on stage, get stage fright and stuff. So I think it's like, you know, the more you do it, though, the more confident I think you get.
Well, so tell me a bit about that sort of loop there, because I'm getting, you know, from, you said from the rush, the chemicals coming through, is it almost, well, is it addictive to do that and be that?
No, stand-up comedy is not addictive because it's a hard graft, you know, like
okay.
You can, you know, I think it's a, you do have to push with stand-up, and you do there is an element of like, some days you will not want to try the new material that's not going to land in a room full of people of six people. So I don't know. That's a really bleak way of looking at it. But, you know, you probably, yeah, you're not going to want to try things, and you do have to have a push for yourself.
Right.
You know, even to write or try new material takes that extra, like, little nudge. You know, I say little nudge. I don't know. You do have to have a lot of self-autonomy, you know? You have to want to do it as well. You have to be disciplined.
Say more about that, the discipline, in terms of getting new stuff out there.
Yeah, well, disciplined in the creativity, you know, sitting down, writing the jokes, refining the jokes, exploring the jokes, exploring the monologue, or even the show. If you're creating a show, you know, keep returning to the page, leave the page, but then don't leave the page for a year. Or don't leave the page for, like, you know, a month. And then, you know, you have to be consistent. And the more that you do that, then the more art shows up for you around you. You start to see more because your spider senses are all open. You know, that's what it's like, I feel, when you're an artist. Or like when you're a creative, the more you start, the more you start to see, because you're writing it down and you're observing, and then more comes through, you know.
I'm just getting the sense of you've really got to open yourself up to everything, all the possibilities that are around you. And I can only guess, if you're, you know, you're a successful stand-up, and as you say, all your jokes are landing, people love you, and you show up and you start telling some other jokes and people don't laugh, that could be a bit crushing, I'd imagine, which is maybe why some stand-ups stick to the same material.
It's crushing, you know, but like you're saying about the commitment, you have to commit to it. Like, I have to commit to that joke. I have to say that with conviction. I have to know that what I'm talking about with conviction. I have to, you know, get up on stage and commit to that. Because if you don't, no one's going to believe you. You know, if you don't believe in yourself, like, they're not going to believe you for shit. Like, if you're going to, you know, you may be saying something a little bit dark and edgy. That's even worse. You know, my last show, I was definitely treading that board of talking about certain themes or topics, which for some people consider edgy or dark. But I'm like, well, this is life. This is life, people. Mm-hmm. Let's not just live in the light all the time. You know, there's there is stuff going on out here, you know, and like, but commit to it, and, you know, absolutely commit to that point, even more so if it's a bit more edgy, or
Was this the Edinburgh Fringe show? Okay, you're gonna have to help me with the pronunciation. I'll go. Is it Ouroboros? Is that Go anywhere again. Close? Oh, Jesus. Ouroboros.
Ouroboros, there you go.
Ouroboros, okay. Second go, that's not bad. So, now, I didn't get up to Edinburgh to see the show. I have read some of the reviews. That sense of, as you were saying, it sounded like it was quite polarizing, because you're, as you say, you're talking about life from a certain angle, and not everyone might see it that way. Is that fair? Is that some of the response you got?
I think it's more of using art or scenes in a certain way that push boundaries.
Yeah.
You know, so whether that's seeing it through a certain lens, it's not, it's more that the stage is the platform for the art to exactly be polarizing and to be confrontational. What is the point? It, you know, my show was more of a, you know, it was stand-up, jokes, comedy, performance art, a whole amalgamation of styles, right?
Yeah.
And people could clearly see that. And I am not I'm not a fool. I've trained for a while, and I know. The funny thing is that show's also had 5 stars, and also, you know, it had a really bad review from someone else. And it's like the art and the piece should be confrontational, and particularly, with certain issues, even if it's a personal issue, why am I not allowed to express my personal experience in a way that's exposing? And it's also vulnerable, and it's also, a hard truth, but You know, some people like that and some people get scared.
I don't get this sense of you're not taking the, and again, maybe the path more traveled, the easy route here. You're going, this is my, again, the word you used there, this is my truth and I'm going to tell it up here.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to, in that, you know, Edinburgh, doing Edinburgh, that in itself is a massive commitment, isn't it? Because it's not, you know, that's not a cakewalk. Getting it all organised, I mean, right?
Yeah. Edinburgh is a huge, it's a huge journey to go on. And every day, you know, flyering or promoting your show, going out there to new audiences. But then the fabulous thing is that those people have chosen to see your show. You know, like I sold out my show. I was standing in the wings, like loving feeling that room fill up because people are interested to see you. And I've had it before where, like, you know, I've committed to a show in other festivals, Brighton and stuff like that, and people commit to come and seeing you. And that's a really wonderful thing. And like, I want to invite more of that, you know, into obviously my future as a, you know, a comedian or a solo artist, or in that sense, like, you know, they've sat down, they've bought a ticket because they're ready for you to take them on an adventure. Mm-hmm. And you have to take them on that. And, you know, how you choose to do it is up to the artist. You know, do you get them in, strap them in, buckle up, you know, we're going on a fucking roller coaster, guys, you know, or you take them with a nice little song and say, we're going to go kiss some frogs and get on the magic carpet. Do you know, I just don't know.
I'm guessing it was the former, was it?
It had both. I was a flamingo. Okay. Listen, I was a flamingo and I played the most beautiful music and I came on in high heels with fans and fluttering and beautiful things. Believe it or not, I was actually dressed as a flamingo for half the show and people found that, you know, really hard to deal with.
Did that, I mean, you said, you know, you talked very passionately there about the experience that you wanted the audience to have, that you were having. What are the lessons that you've learned out of that, maybe, for, is there another Edinburgh coming up? What's next, I suppose?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gigging here in LA and making some fabulous connections and just seeing the maddest stuff. You know, these people are hilarious. And I just can't stop. You know, every time I go out, like I was in the gym this morning and it is just like character. And it's great because I can write from this place. I can make fun out of them. And that's funny because I'm a British person. I can poke at it a bit. And I'm definitely writing a new show and I'm going to have it here. And I'm going to do a couple of work in progresses over the next coming months. And that's all I can say on that right now. But I'm loving it. And I'll never stop. I'll never stop making. No one will ever, no matter what anyone says or does, can stop you from doing what brings, or what you love to do.
This is sort of the area I wanted to, I don't want to dwell on it too hard, but it is in commitment and in mojo of when, and you talked about it earlier, nothing's going to stop me. But when the critics do sharpen their pencil, or someone, I don't know, when the audience heckles, or I don't know if that's even a thing for you, but is there any kind of doubt, questioning for you?
Yeah, like, you know, people, will try so hard, especially, hey, look, I don't want to play the woman card, but I will a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, if you are I'm a white, straight woman with blonde hair, 5'8", you know, I'm not struggling so hard with certain things. And some people really don't like that, you know. Some people don't like to see that. And look, regardless of the way you look either, I don't want to say too much about that, but I think that can it can definitely, you know, play a part in how people see you in the industry and stuff, or how they think that they can do things to you. Mm-hmm. And because of people will try. And I think you just have to, like you said, you have to become strong in your will and become, you know, kind to yourself as well in those moments. You know, if people do say or harmful things and want to push you out and you know, exile you from the comedy scene or from whatever scene. Like, make your own fucking scene. You know.
For the reason you said, this is why I do it. I'm compelled to do it. And some people feel compelled when people are in the, you know, public eye, whether it be comics, whether it be athletes, get a lot of this. It's totally legitimate for me to say something pretty mean about that person because they've decided to put themselves up there and out there. And that the world's awash with this. And you're experiencing it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like you choose to expose or reveal or play and take people on a journey and get up and try something new, experiment, you know, explore something new. And then if people just go, piece of shit, no one likes it, no one likes you, they're this, they're that, or, you know, every other horrible thing. Yeah, let's imagine that for a second. Because, you know, I know a couple of comedians who are so good and amazing charisma, energy, style, but they're completely outlandish and very different. And I know one, I won't say their name, and he's so good. And he had once a really bad Edinburgh, like a really bad Edinburgh. And it scarred him so much that he didn't go back for like 8 years. And I did a show with this person, and he is so awesome. And he just, you know, he says to me, fuck them, Charlotte. Literally, don't read it. Doesn't matter. Don't give a fuck. Like, just keep doing your thing and people will catch up. And, you know, I also had another phenomenal comedian who, you know, I won't mention their name, but really, really, really huge, really big British name. They're amazing. They're amazing. Yeah. Very, very well established people. And,
yeah.
And, you know, one of them was like, just, you know, keep doing your thing. It really doesn't, you know, don't let it get to you. And my dad used to always say to me that if you're running a race, just look to where you're going in your lane at the finish line, at the trophy, and stay on track and don't look at the side. Doesn't matter about who's there and who's running beside you. Just stay and look down the end to the end and that finish line and keep going. Keep going, even if you don't want to, even if little hurdles and bumps, just keep going, keep going. And I think that's what it's like, you know, with your life path or the goal and dream and the get moving, the art, the show, stay on the track, you know.
Yeah, that's great advice from your dad, I would say. And you know, supportive comedians in your realm. And what is that for you in terms of, is there a goal? Is there a trophy? But this is why I'm so committed. This is what I'm in.
I think it's definitely changed and like evolved.
Yeah.
You know, because like years ago, it was really the acting. And I was like, I want to be at the Royal Shakespeare Company. You know, I wanted to be in a classical theatre play at the National. And then I was like, actually, And then I was like, you know, doing mime and clown and I was like, oh, I really like solo work. Oh, I really like performance art. Oh, I love music, you know. Actually, I've become this, like, I have a few things, a few tools or a few bits of colour in my palette now that I choose to express with. So I think at the end goal for me is really, you know, I am making, you know, my art my life, and I am working and creating, delivering art, whether it's comedy in, you know, stand-up, or it's theatrical sense, or it's a combination of both, which I'm kind of developing at the moment, is that genre, which I think is I'm developing this genre for myself of, you know, the stand-up combined with this theatrical sense. And some newer people are doing that now, because it requires, sometimes audiences now are requiring that kind of more inventiveness. But yeah, it's that. It's I'm making art and I'm performing comedy, playing comedy every day, doing it on a tour, you know, every single day, basically. Yeah. For the rest of my life.
Well, I mean, I love this sort of, what I'm getting from this, which I'm getting helps with the commitment, is this evolution. It's not standing still. It's constantly in motion. And because a previous guest in the first episode, actually, Ben Dunwell, he's an author, and he talked about what keeps him going and the ability to get past any kind of writer's block is is I'm learning something new. I am constantly in change. And that's what I'm just hearing from you there. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and you're going through life and experiences are constantly shifting and changing. So naturally, what you start to write or produce or perform grows alongside you. And that is a real beauty to it because, you know, it's like a music artist, isn't it? You know, Arctic Monkeys' first album don't sound the same now, does it? So, you know, his first Dancing Shoes doesn't sound the same as Arabella or whatever, you know, because it does evolve and sounds and styles and tastes change and, you know, things alter and audiences change and new people come through. So I think that is the job of an artist as well, to kind of be not on trend, because if I could be on trend, then I'd be a TikTok influencer. I think he's right. I think that's definitely it is. You are in motion. If you're staying static, yeah, then I'd question that.
And I was going to ask, actually, you mentioned the TikTok influencers. It is part of this, you know, the evolution for you. Is it how you reach audiences in a new and different way? Is that part of the thing?
I mean, that is it, isn't it? Like, this is modern life. This is 2024, people. You know, this is content influencer, TikTok accounts exploding. And yeah, like that plays a huge influence on people, people's popularity. I know some amazing comedians and actors who have blown up, you know, colossal now. Their accounts are 500,000, you know, they're nearly on their way to millions. And then they take a show and then they tour it and they sell out every single night. And then they, you know, and that's amazing. That is so amazing. And I love that. And I have to say that, you know, I don't look at other people in the business and ever really feel a element of, oh, they've got this and they've done that, and a jealousy or any kind of rivalry. I really don't have that anymore, you know. And I think, you know, when you're a little bit starting out sometimes in things, you look at those people and you go, oh, I wish I could have that. I wish I could do that. But that person spent ages delivering content every day for like a long time. And I know a guy, one of my friends, he was supporting Ricky Gervais. He's a comedian. He's fabulous. And he also is a TV presenter. And he was telling me, he was like, Charlotte, you know, you've got to get on the content. You've got to get on the content. I was like, you know, but it's so exhausting. And he was like, you've got to think of the content as your fast food and the stand-up as the Michelin star.
I see. Content,
you know, he was like, churn out your fries and your cheap stuff out on the content on TikTok. People love it. Keep your nice, refined stuff, the Michelin star for the stage. And he told me that and I listened and said, yeah, and I still haven't done anything.
Well, they're in, because that's another, you know, commitments around choice, and you're choosing, like, that's for some reason, energetically, you're not drawn to that.
Tell me, should I? What should I do? Should
I'm in no way qualified to tell you what you should or shouldn't do. But what I'm just hearing from you is no, there's a resistance for whatever reason.
Yeah, but is that resistance? Yeah, you know, exactly. The resistance is what one has to overcome, isn't it? You know, it's the fear of judgment, the fear that those things are out there, you know, all of that stuff.
My question is, here's you putting yourself up and open to judgment night in, night out on stage, telling your jokes. And is that the same fear or different to, I'm going to do a TikTok and see what happens?
It's really funny that it is a good question, because I said that, you know, like I have said that, like I can get up on stage and I can get up on stage with a mic and just hang out and talk and do silly things. And yet for some reason, I think I have to want to say something. I have to be wanting to say something for me. It's like, what's the intention and what am I actually saying? What does that serve? You know, because I see some people can be totally meaningless if I'm just blowing hot air in someone's face, or am I actually trying to say and do something. So I think until I've discovered what that message is on for myself, you know, on a content, on this content flex, that's probably where I will then, yeah, that's when things start to capitalize, isn't it? When someone's got a trend or they've got a certain thing about, you know, I don't know, I'm thinking of Russell Brand for some reason, but Russell Brand, you know, was really into this, he was a comedian, but then very into the hyper spiritual stuff.
Mm.
Like, love that vibe. We're not sure about him now, but or I don't know if we ever were or whatever. But you know, people find that, don't they? Or yeah, or they just record their granddad eating like fish, and then that gets goes viral or something. Like,
I get the sense it needs to matter to you, mean something to you, like it does the stage stuff for that to get going. And I wanted to again sort of shift gears again a little bit, and we talked a little bit about kind of self-care and stuff as we've gone. And you're a yogi, you run retreats, you meditate a lot. Tell me about that balance, because it sounds like a balance. Is that are they really important to have the yin to the yang?
Yes, the yoga has been, yeah, like paramount in keeping me grounded, you know, in the chaos and the uncertainty of acting, performing, and that world, which is completely unstable, you know, really, until you get a series regular or a tour or something, you know, it's very precarious and people know that. So I think the yoga is always very nice because you can keep in a, you can keep all that madness off stage, on stage, just, yeah, you can come into yourself, you know, you can come onto your mat. I love yoga. I love it. You know, I have done it for so many years and it has been my real sanctuary. Yoga is a good thing to be able to kind of, no matter what's going on around you, you can sit in silence or move on a mat and you can just, you know, come back to calm, come back to one, come back to zero, in fact, where nothing else, you know, you're not at a 10 on stage, or you're not at a minus 100 in a, you know, in a shed or something. Sorry, I'm just going off on, like, you know, drunk in a shed in a random's house, you know, we've all been there. And, you know, you come back with yoga and it's just that, like, cleaning. Everything gets cleaned. You like clean your mind, your body, your soul. Everything's nice and clean, so you can see yourself again. You know, without all that, like you said, you know, the identification, the job role, the age, the wife, the kids. You're just free, and that's really important, because then also when I do that, I feel free in my expression more, and I sit, and it will. My meditations and yoga will guide me, because it's conversations with my spirit and it's conversations with the universe or God. And I love it. I'm so tapped into that. It is a phenomenal practice. And I love doing retreats. I've done about 8 or 9 now. You know, I get to travel around and help people and guide people. In a fun, playful way as well, you know. I don't take it so seriously.
Well, I was going to ask actually if the, you know, the two sides of you come together in that place.
Oh, hell yeah.
And there's some yoga gags.
Yeah, you know, for sure. I cross them over. I definitely write a lot about this hyper-spiritual, hyper-material, you know, here as well. Oh, LA is full of it. You know, these people are there, you know, they're riding the spiritual plane, but they're also full of toxins, Botox and lip filler. And, you know, it's complete contradiction. But I love that. You know, it's just real. Like, that's life. You know, we're not angels, devils or whatever. We're all just fluctuating, you know, all just, yeah, all just two sides, you know, dark, light, and or yin yang or whatever. So, yeah. It does. It brings you back into the whole sense. I really love it.
Yeah, I see that. And, you know, a lot of people I speak to having whatever they call it, but essentially a daily practice that keeps you. And I love when you're talking about, I am zero. When I'm doing my yoga, I am zero.
Yeah.
And just that plane of, this is where everything builds from here, I guess. And that's what a lot of people Well, they have their daily practice, be it a meditation, yoga, breath work, just sitting still, which is not the easiest thing to do these days. That is also a practice in itself. So that's great to hear.
And it's ego checking as well, you know, it's checking in with the ego, you know, like your ego is going to be like, I got to get on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. I need to win an Oscar next week. Like, you know, your mind will tell you that you need to be, you know, doing these things at an outlandish speed, you know, because your mind's saying all this stuff. But then you, if you sit back and you go, okay, this is the journey, there's the goal, I'm going to, you know, every day sit on the mat, do the ritual, do the commitment, like, if the foundations are flaky, you can't build the house, you know what I mean? Or to build the mansion, or to build the whatever empire that you're trying to make. So yeah, that's the kind of thing for me that yoga kind of does, the grounding, the groundwork.
And Charlotte, how can people find out more about what you're doing, what's coming up, follow you? What are the best routes to checking out Charlotte Fox?
Well, I'm living in Los Angeles now, people. So if you want to see me in person, I guess you got to book a flight here. No, I'm joking. You can follow me on Instagram. I'm at the Psychedelic Fox. I do some really fun stuff. People love watching my journey on there. So follow along for the ride.
Yeah, it's a very good follow. I'm one of those followers since we met at TEDx last year. Always puts a smile on my face.
You know, honestly, Richard, I get people messaging me, you know, saying things, how are you doing this? How are you doing that? And I love watching this and it's lovely, you know? And that's again why social media and content can be a great thing to keep people connected through the multiverse. And I will also be doing some shows here, and I will be back in Europe, actually. I'm coming back to Ibiza, May and June. Yeah, doing two retreats in Ibiza. So if you want to jump on those, I'm actually doing one with an amazing lady from, she's directed about 13 films here. She does a lot of creative work, and she's doing some art ceremonies and stuff with us. So yeah, come along if you're on the island.
Okay, we'll pop the links to that in the show notes, I will your Instagram.
Thank you, my love.
That's the win-win for everybody.
Great. Yeah. And then who knows, you know, I'm writing a show now and some new projects. So we'll see how that goes over the next 3 months and the life after that. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, Charlotte, look, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you over there in La La Land in LA.
Yeah.
I really appreciate your time, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you, Richard. It was a vibe. Really appreciate it. See you soon.
Such an enjoyable conversation, full of buoyancy and flair. I highly recommend following Charlotte on Instagram, actually. Very funny stuff, given her way of looking at life. And as ever, lots to draw out in this conversation. I mean, I loved her description of the flow state that she gets into on stage, how time simply has no meaning for her. And don't we all want a bit more flow in our lives? And the honesty too. I mean, look, comedy, especially stand-up comedy, is hard graft, she says. There's discipline required, the thick skin required, and the commitment to stay on your artistic path and not deviate. And that obviously led to the advice from her dad, which I also love, about keeping going, staying on track to run your race and not the race of those around you. So a great conversation. Thank you so much, Charlotte, for joining us on the podcast. And I've got links to Charlotte's Instagram and her yoga retreats there in the show notes, so do find out more. And as I mentioned, please do rate, review and share this podcast. There's also 70 other amazing conversations that I've had with guests over the last 4 years. As I said, really diverse and brilliant guests and stories you'll really want to hear. And I also invite you to find out more about Mojo Leadership on the website, the one-to-one coaching that we offer, and the team workshops that we also offer to companies and to businesses. I'll be back next week with another inspiring guest and their story of mojo and commitment to their passion. Until then, I hope your mojo continues to flow.